level of detail will get us into too much trouble. Okay.
In fact, in Regalacus, what does one do with the far northern latitudes above Shabbos?
Serious problem. Don't Shabbat at the North Pole.
What happens when you go south?
Same.
In reverse?
Yeah, same in reverse. But you have it for all northern and southern latitudes here on these tables. Fine. Okay. So now, all of this is fairly clear cut. Now we're going to get into complicated stuff. The thing's being complicated mainly because of some gross misconceptions. As we saw, the Rambam was well aware of all of the true astronomical data. And now let me quickly remind you of the origin of what Rabbeinu Tam set out to explain, and then we will read Rabbeinu Tam in the original to get to him. So there are two passages in the Gemara which apparently seem to contradict one another. The first is the Gemara in Shabbat, which starts out by saying, let me find it here, Tanu Rabbanan. This is a Gemara, you all have this, and we've learned this Gemara many times, so I'll go through it quickly. This is Shabbat Daf Lamed Aleph on the base. Tanu Rabbanan, Bein Hashmashot, Safek Min Hayom, Umin Halayla. Safek Kulo Min Hayom, Safek Kulo Min Halayla. Matilin Oto L'Chomer Shnei Yamin. So in other words, twilight, the twilight zone is a period of doubt. And therefore, we go L'Chomer both ways during this period of doubt. What is the definition of Bein Hashmashot? Now, here, listen carefully to the words. Misha Tishka HaChama Kol Zman Shepnei Mizrach Ma'adimim. Bein Hashmashot is when the sun has set, all during the time that the eastern horizon is pink. So remember, we saw that from Minaret's book, that the first thing that happens after the sun set is that the eastern horizon has this pink line. Hechzif ha-tachton, v'lo hechzif ha-elyon, if the lower portion of the eastern horizon has become silvery, but the higher portion has not yet become silvery, bein hashmashot, hechzif ha-elyon v'heshvel ha-tachton, when this borderline between the pink area in the eastern horizon is no longer visible, and it looks like one continuous passage, Zeholayla, Devrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Nechemya Omer, Kedei Sheyehalech Adam Mishitishka HaChama Chatzi Mil, from the time of sunset, as long as it takes a man to walk half a mil. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Bein Hashmashot Keheref Ayin, there's no such thing as Bein Hashmashot, it's just like the blink of an eye. Zeh Nechnas V'zeh Yotzei V'i Asher La'amod Olav. Okay, so, and then the Gemara continues. Omar Rabba Omar Yehuda, Kwich Kwuch V'tani, Ezehu Bein Hashmashot, what is the definition of Bein Hashmashot? Mishetishka HaChama Kol Zman Shot Kenei Mizrach Ma'adimim, from the time that the sun set, so long as the eastern horizon is red, v'yechzif ha-tachton v'lo yechzif ha-elyon, nami bein ha-shmashot, that's also bein ha-shmashot, yechzif ha-elyon v'eshvel ha-tachton, laila. Rav Yosef amar Rav Yehuda ha-mishmur alach ha-kitani, mi she-tishka ha-chama kol zman she-pnei mizrach madimim yom, yechzif ha-tachton v'lo yechzif ha-elyon bein ha-shmashot, yechzif ha-elyon v'eshvel ha-tachton, laila. So there's a short period of time after the setting of the sun, while there's still the pink glow along the eastern horizon, and the shadow of the earth is not yet visible on the east, that's Elyon. The Shiur Bein Hashmashot Bekama, how long is this period of Bein Hashmashot? How long does this period of doubt last? Amar Rabba, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Shlosha Chelkei Mil, three quarters of a mil. So all of this is completely intelligible in terms of what we see. They're describing a series of phenomena that are taking place on the eastern horizon, and then you had different opinions as to whether it's the length of time that a normal person walks half a mil, two-thirds of a mil, or three-quarters of a mil, as along this period lasts. Yes?
Totally use this expression,
yeah, sure. The question is, what is Erev and what is Bein Harabayim? And all of that's basically what's trying to be defined here. And as someone pointed out, once you try to take these intuitive things and try to make them precise, you always get into trouble. And we will get into plenty of trouble here. Okay. Here's another thing. Just a moment. Now, here's something that throws a slight monkey wrench into this. Amar Bai Shvamelech, Havi Abai Chazye Lo Rava, the Tadar Davi Lamara. Abai saw that Rava was faced looking towards the western horizon in order to determine whether the day had ended or not. Amar Le Vahatanya Kol Zman Shepnei Mizrach Madimin, that we should look at the period of time when the eastern horizon is pink. So he says, Amar le misavre pnei mizrach mamash. Don't think that it means the real eastern horizon. Lo panim hamamidim et hamizrach. It means the west, because the west is what lights up the east. So if of course the events that we're talking about are occurring on the eastern horizon, then we're talking events which are with solar depressions of maybe 3 or 4 degrees. If we're waiting for the pink light to disappear in the east, then of course it considerably later. That's maybe 5 or 6 degrees of solar depression, or maybe less, but certainly much more. So already in the Gemara you have a bit of disagreement as to whether the twilight ends when the eastern horizon has become completely, the pink glow has disappeared, or whether it's later. Fine. And of course there's also the Gemara that says that kochav echad yom, when you see one star, it's still daylight. Shnei kochavim is Ben Hashmashot, and when you see three stars, it's nighttime. That's what you were referring to. And the Gemara adds, Lo kochavim hagdolim hanirim bayom, not three stars which are visible during the day. Now, of course, that becomes a tautology unless you have a different definition of a day. So, kochav hanirim bayom, if by that you mean stars which are visible while the sun has not completely set, that would just exclude the major planets. And maybe, according to this handout that I gave, the stars of zero magnitude. But of course, if Nirin Bayom refers to a much later phenomenon, then you might have Tzeta Kochavim referring to much smaller stars, second or third magnitude stars, rather than first magnitude stars, which are certainly not visible while the sun is in the sky. Okay, this is one Gemara. A second Gemara, also in the name of Rava, says that the length of twilight is either 4 or 5 million. Not 3/4 of a mil, but 5 million. Yomar Rava Rachana Mar Yochanan Kama Malach Adam Benoni Beyom Esav Vasaot Melot HaShachar V'Netzach Hama 5 million Mishkiyat HaChama Tzeta Kochavim 5 million Nimtza Ovav Shel Rakia Echad Mishisha Beyom. So according to the Gemara in Psachim, the length of time is much longer than 3/4 of a mil. It's 4 mil, or maybe even 5 mil.
Walking slower, like an older man walking slower.
But I thought if it gets dark, he's walking slower because he doesn't see where he's going.
Well, at any event, the simplest explanation, of course, is that they're referring to two different things. One is referring to the end of the day because it's gotten too dark to do work or what have you. At any event, that Gemara on Shabbat is referring to a halachic definition, whereas the Gemara on Pesachim would be referring, if you took it to be at the solstice, at the equinox, again, you're 18 degrees below the horizon, the end of astronomical twilight. So just as in modern books you have a difference between the end of civil twilight and the end of astronomical twilight, similarly, there's not necessarily any contradiction between the Gemara and Shabbat, which was dealing with a halacha as to when we should define the end of Bein HaShemashot and declare it night as far as the rules of the halacha are concerned, and the Gemara and Pesachim, which is giving you a lesson in astronomy, telling you how long it is until the end of astronomical twilight. So everybody would be happy with that except for Rabbeinu Tam. And now let's see what Rabbeinu Tam does with that definition. And we better read him carefully, because he had a major effect on practice, even though not for three or four centuries after his time. Okay. Okay. So this is from the Sefer HaYashar of Rabbeinu Tam. Of course, he may not have written every word here, but his students wrote down on his lectures. So it's a trustworthy recording of Rabbeinu Tam's position. Rabba Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Kuch V'tani. You should combine the two. Ezehu Bein HaShmashot. What is the definition of Bein HaShmashot? Misha Tishkah HaChama. From the time that the sun sets, Kol Zman Shepnei Mizrach Madimim. Echsif HaTachton V'lo Echsif HaElyon Bein HaShmashot. Echsif HaElyon V'Shvel HaTachton Laila. V'Hachi Perusha. This is the explanation of the Gemara. Ezehu bein hashmashot v'mesafkalan im chetzio min hayom o chetzio min halayla o kulo yom b'chulu mi shetishka hachama kol zman shepnei mizrach ma'adimim. And hai pnei mizrach hu ma'arav. He takes Rava's quote that says that when it says pnei mizrach, it's not referring to the eastern horizon but rather to the west. Shenikra pnei mizrach le'et erev kol zman שהוא מאדים עד שיחשיר התחתון ולא העליון בין השמשות. Okay. Now, let's read his words carefully, because they've been distorted over the ages, even though they were not great to start with. ולא תמה, you should not say, משעה שרוצה החמה להיכנס ברקיה, not from the time that the sun wishes to enter into the firmament, ומאז הוא מתחיל לירדם, because at that time the sun begins to turn red, אלא משתשקע החמה, means שכבר נכנסה ברקיע, the sun has already entered the firmament, ועברה בעובב של רקיע, and it's now through the entire thickness of the רקיע, והוא עדיין כנגד החלום. So, Rabbeinu Tam is saying, has this view as to what the sun is doing. It's tunneling through the firmament. There's a window in the firmament, this thick firmament that the sun is tunneling through. And it gets to the end of its tunnel, and then it's moving beyond. Umishum shadayin lo avaret cholono. Since it hasn't yet left the window, lo pasak cholono. It still is giving some light to the earth, because that light is coming through the hole in the firmament, and it's the window of the sun. Okay, so this is Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam is positing a flat earth theory with the vault of the firmament over the earth, and in contrast to the Rambam or Rav Sadia Gaon, who lived 200 years earlier, who knew that the earth was a globe, the Rambam, who knew that the reason that we have light after the sunset is because of reflection from the atmosphere, Rabbeinu Tam has this weird theory that the sun is still giving some light during the twilight, because some light is coming through the tunnel. And Mishetishka Hachama means after the sun has left its position at the end of the tunnel. Ve'al kochacha ani tzarech lafaresh v'shitishka hachama kamo shepirashti shekvar nechnesa barakia, after the sun has already entered the firmament, ve'it teima misha'a shematchil likanes ze eino yachol liyot. It can't refer to the time when the sun begins to enter the rakia. This can't be. The thickness of the firmament is 1/6 of the thickness of the time of the earth. It's 5 milin to If you interpret mishitishkach hamach to be sunset, be in Cain, havi vein hashmashot chameshet milim. Then you'd have five, the length of time it takes a man to work five, walk 5 milim for the length of twilight. You can kasha the rabba ad rabba. Then there's a contradiction, because rabba here in Masechet Shabbat says that it's only 3/4 mil, and there in Masechet Pesachim he's saying that it's 5 mil. The rabba amar lekaman de lo havi bein hashmashot ela tilter bevei mil. Ela al kochaka mishkiyata chama yom gamuru. From the time on the beginning of sunset, it's still complete day. Umishum hachi garsinan be mishkiyata chama mishra shiyatchil leikaneis barakiyah lishkiyah. Umishetishka, in the word mishetishka, mashma shenichnas kvar v'adayin lo agiyah l'acharei kipa mikol v'kol. That's it. So that's Rabbeinu Tam. It's not clear to me what Rabbeinu Tam means, that when the sun begins to enter the firmament. From Rabbeinu Tam's language itself, it's conceivable that in his model, this beginning to enter the firmament is when the sun begins to redden, which might be well before the actual physical setting of the sun. But because there was a contradiction between the Gemara in Shabbat and the Gemara in Pesachim, he comes to the conclusion that the phrase "Mishetishka hachama" used in Masechet Shabbat refers to when the sun has completed its passage through the tunnel and is beginning to move away from the tunnel, so no longer can any of the light of the sun go through the tunnel and light up the earth. Okay. So, that's Rabbeinu Tam. That's the famous Rabbeinu Tam, and we've read it in his own words. We should also see what... I didn't make a copy to pass this out because I passed this out last time. We can also see what his student, Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz, has to write on this subject. Okay. First of all, this was Rabbeinu Tam was explaining a contradiction between two different texts in the Gemara. It didn't occur to him at all that this should have any effect on practice. I mean, this was just the resolution of a contradiction. The practice, as we saw, Rabbeinu Tam simply followed what the practice was that was more important than anything it said in the Gemara. So all that he was interpreting was that the true Shkia is after the sun has left the end of the tunnel at the other end, and it really isn't Shabbat, say on Friday evening before then, strictly speaking, but the custom of the community is to be tzaddikim, be much more machmir, and be makabel Shabbat much earlier. No, what happened was that, first of all, Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz, we're running a bit out of time, so I'll simply tell you what Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz says. Again, it's a matter of linguistic distinction. According to Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz, not only does the sun tunnel through the firmament at the end of the day, but the stars tunnel through little holes in the firmament in the other direction, which is why we see the stars at night. And therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz, Shkiyat HaChama is even before the sun has set below the horizon. When the sun begins to redden, that means that it's entered the firmament, and by the time it sets, that's the end of Bein HaShmashot. So sunset is definitely the end of Bein HaShmashot. The beginning of Bein HaShmashot is 5 or 6 degrees, when the sun is 5 or 6 degrees above the horizon, so that can be as much as 30 or 40 minutes before sunset. And the phrase Tzeta Kochavim means not when you see the stars, but when the stars have left their position above the firmament and have begun to tunnel through the firmament from the top down. Now,
did I miss these two individuals saw Kia Coles and all of that. And at that time, when they were resolving the issue,
people were doing, were lighting candles long before sunset, okay. Even longer
and
than we may today.
200 years later, people changed.
Right. Why? 300 years later.
Why?
400 years later.
Why?
Okay, so why? The main reasons why was that the whole day changed. The European day changed. The second main reason why was that the clock was invented, and the civil clock ended half an hour to 40 minutes after the sunset. So everyone agreed that the day ended at the end of the 24th hour, which was 30 or 40 minutes after sunset. So,
so there was no halacha discrepancy.
So there was no discrepancy between the halacha and the way the normal person did with the civil clock. Now, as to how this had any influence on practice, the story is, in brief, and we will next, the Ramban took up this position of Rabbi Natan. He loved this whole resolution, the picture and the resolution, and he used it to solve a puzzle, a different puzzle. The Ramban wrote here,
yeah, the economical knowledge of this, at this time, the Ramban, okay. Where was that at?
Well, Rabbi Natan and the Rambam were more or less contemporaneous. And the Rambam was completely up to date on all...
Not the Rambam, you said the Ramban.
Yes, the Ramban, who lived about 100 years later, was completely unaware of astronomical information, just as Rabbi Natan was, even though he lived at that time in Catalonia, so he should have had... The fact that Jews were getting an excellent scientific education continued through the time of the Rambam, but didn't continue all the way down to the time of the Ramban. However, let's read what the Ramban had to say. V'kan hevi ha'inyan l'faresh davar ne'elam mida'at rabim. I'm now going, this is in the Torah to Adam, I handed this out also last time. I'm now going to explain something, writes the Ramban, which has been known to very few. My predecessors did not really go into detail explaining this. We have a principle of Mosifim Me'achol HaLakodesh. What is this referring to? What time is there to add from Chol HaLakodesh? The Vadai Kodem Bein HaShemashotu. Certainly, this is a period of time which is prior to Bein HaShemashot, because during Bein HaShemashot you have no option. Since it's Safek Yom, Safek Laila, you have to assume on Friday night that it's Laila. The Vadai Kodem Bein HaShemashot, the HaTosefet Aseh, because if you don't do Tosefet Shabbat, you have at worst violated a positive commandment of not adding Michol HaKodesh. Bein HaShemashot, Safek La'onesh Karetu Mita V'chaya Vadai. We all have to agree that Tosefet Shabbat is some period of time prior to Bein HaShemashot, says the Rambam.
But after Shkia, before
Shkia. Ah, so now comes this. The Shiur Bein HaShemashot itlugu Allah Amoroi Beperk Lamed Lukin, Maskana, Mishitishkeha Chama Havi Bein HaShemashot Ad Seta Kochavim. That is Bein HaShemashot from the time of sunset until Seta Kochavim. V'im Kain HaTosefet HaZeh Kodem Shkiyat HaChama. If that's going to be the case, if by definition the voluntary addition Michol HaLakodesh is Kodem Shkiyat HaChama, V'zeh Davar Gadol Shel Teima. This is impossible. This is impossible. Shetehei chama zorachet kenegdo v'chayav ve'inui v'yisur molochav. How is it conceivable that the sun is still shining? You can see the sun shining, and yet you should be prohibited from eating if it's Erev Yom Kippur or doing molochav with Shabbat. In other words, our current practice of being mosif michol ha'kodesh before sunset is absolutely inconceivable to the Ramban. This can certainly not be true, says the Ramban, that the sun is shining and you cannot work or you cannot eat. Okay?
But he doesn't realize that
it's time that's given. No. Vatani nami v'kulan beit hilel matir ha'sher v'shatzach. Okay? So, ומהו הזמן הזה שעשתה אותו תורה תוספת והזירו אותו עליו ועשה כבר ראיתו לרבנו תם בספר הישר. So now he's going to resolve this difficulty, which for him is an impossibility and for us is just normal everyday practice, every Friday practice. וראיתי לרבנו תם בספר הישר שלו פירוש נכון בסוגיה עבור בפרק מהן בבדניקה. I saw the correct and true explanation given Rabbi Rabbeinu Tam in Bamemet Dikin, Shehu Zechrono Levocha, Piresh, the Nishtishka Hama, the Hitma Hacha, Shehu Ben Ashmashot, Hainu Misof Shkiyat Hama. That's from the end of Shkiyat Hama, Klomar, Misha'a She Nishka'a Barakia, Vuadayim Keneged Chalona. When it already has set into the firmament, but it still has not moved away from being opposite its window. Lufisha lo avracha lana v'adayin eino mahalechet acharei kippah p'nei harakia madimin. Since it has not yet left the position of the hole and not moved back over the firmament, that's why the sun is still there. K'negen mekoma shel chama. V'zehu kol zman sh'p'nei chama madimin mitva b'gemara. Aval tchilat shkiyat hachama shehi hasha'a sh'etchila likanes barakia. ונסתלקז ריחתה מן הארץ קודם הזמן הזה, קודם הזמן הזה. Now, that's an important sentence for us. He's now, first of all, adopted Rabbeinu Tam's position to solve a different problem. Rabbeinu Tam had to resolve the contradiction between the Gemara and Shabbos and the Gemara and Pesachim, and he resolved it by this theory of the sun tunneling through. The Ramban takes it for granted that it's impossible that the Tosefet Yom HaKippurim or Tosefet Shabbat should be while the sun is shining. So he says that, he writes that this period of voluntary addition is after the sun has entered the Rakia, which for the Ramban means when the sun is no longer visible. That's something that Rabbeinu Tam didn't say explicitly. But for all we knew, Rabbeinu Tam may have meant when the sun has begun to enter the firmament, and you still see it because that's when the sun begins to redden. But the Ramban adds one clause, which is that the beginning of entering into the firmament is when the sun is no longer visible above the earth. And from that period of time until 3¾ mil later is all the voluntary time that you can have. So here we have a combination of two, I don't know how to say it, but two bad theories. One is Rabbeinu Tam's theory of what the sun is actually doing and interpreting Mishetishkach Hamal when the sun moves away from its hole at the other end. Another, because he wanted to resolve a contradiction between the Gemara and Shabbos and the Gemara and Pesachim, and it never occurred to Rabbeinu Tam that this was might have some effect on practice. And now the Ramban is also resolving another puzzle. He cannot accept fact that Remosif Niachol al Kodesh, when the sun is still visible, and therefore he takes Rabbeinu Tam's position, but he makes it a little bit more precise. Namely, the sun enters the Rakia when it's no longer visible as the sun, and it ends as Rabbeinu Tam says it's going to end. When enter the tunnel, is no longer visible as the sun.
It's an opaque window.
Right. Okay. Now, what happened was, of course, that Rabbeinu Tam and the Ramban were supreme halachic authorities, and someone like the Rambam, who certainly knew the astronomical information, didn't have to tell you that sunset meant sunset, and there was no such thing as tunneling through a rakia, because this was taken for granted. And the Ramban, having such an authority in Spain, had most of his students and followers simply assenting to his position. So when the author of the Shulchan Aruch, Yosef Karo, started to write what he was writing, he just took all the written material that he had at his disposal And there was seemingly a unanimous position, because the position of Rabbeinu Tam was stated explicitly, the Ramban was stated explicitly. So therefore, like the Birchei Yosef, like the Chidah said, he simply, his typical method of operation was to take all the written sources and follow the majority. And here he didn't even have to follow the majority, because no one had to, the Rambam didn't have to tell you that the earth was round. He took it for granted that everybody knew that. So there was no contradictory explicit position. So the Shulchan Aruch wrote what he wrote because all of the texts on which he relied said the same thing. So he just simply wrote it. As we saw from absolute evidence the last few times, it did not reflect actual practice at his time. And it didn't bother him, because he figured that the Jews of his time were very exceptionally religious and were being Mosif Mechol al HaKodesh to the maximum. They voluntarily...
Did he know about conversion?
Well, he lived well before. He lived substantially... He lived approximately at the same time, but no, he didn't know about Copernicus. But neither did the Vilna Gaon know about Copernicus, and the Vilna Gaon, after all, lived a couple of hundred years later. The impact of the advances of science, of the scientific revolution, you know, the Vilna Gaon is usually quoted as being a great proponent of science. If you look at his scientific writings, and any of his writings, shows not a single trace of anything that's post-medieval. But he did know that the earth was round. So he did know the Vilna Gaon Ptolemaic astronomy. But here, the Mechaber didn't even know that, or at least he took the position of Rabbeinu Tam. So the answer to your question is that this was a theoretical position which was in the scholarly literature that no man on the street, if he was not a yeshiva student or a rav, would ever see. So the practice continued as it did. And had it simply been that the Shulchan Aruch wrote another book which was intended also only for scholars, it would also have had zero effect. But what intervened in the middle was the printing press, so that the Shulchan Aruch became disseminated, so that any balabas going away on a trip might have a copy of the Shulchan Aruch either with him or at his disposal at the shul in Yaroslav or Lublin or wherever the fair was, and there it said black and white that the whole period of time from sunset to 58 and a half minutes later is purely voluntary.
But, I mean, the Mechaber could have reconciled the practice of the day with what he wrote of as Friday, about the fact that they were being mostly, but how did he reconcile it as Moshe Shabbat?
He reconciled it for the simple reason that you waited until it got dark and you didn't measure those periods of time off by clock. He may not even. I can't attest to what types of clock did or did not exist in Tzfat. But certainly, in earlier periods, there was no means of measuring time.
No, but in other words, he could say, okay, Shabbat, you should light candles at the time of, you know, sunset plus 30 minutes, or sunset plus 40 minutes, but he expressed it that way. And the fact that people are lighting, you know, 40 minutes earlier than that is a reflection. But he must have known that they were also taking Shabbat out again on the other end.
How would he have known that?
Because in the...
Without a clock, how would he have known that?
He just knew what time it was. I mean, they may not have measured in minutes, but if, you know, he's saying Shabbat should start here, but it's really starting here, but certainly he knew that they were letting it out here and not here. He may not have
what is here and here? He knows that Shabbat starts after the sun is quite dark,
right?
And there are many stars out.
Right.
And they wait approximately that same amount of time and a little bit longer on, let's say, Shabbat. Friday night, they all are being big machmirim, and they're mekabel Shabbat much earlier than they strictly have to. And Motzei Shabbat, how do you know if you don't have a clock?
So, but what he's saying is basically they're letting it out at about the same time that it comes in.
15 minutes later. After all, that's all that's required, 13 and a half minutes. 13 and a half minutes is not a very noticeable amount of time. So they, okay? And the fact of the matter is that at no time prior to the 19th century did anybody wait something like 72 minutes on Motzei Shabbat. You see that clearly, for example, I mean, Beinish, which is the standard book on the subject, you know, attributes this to a decision of someone the author of the book Menachat Kohen. That's it's a very bad book in the sense that it's full of just gross astronomical errors, but and it certainly had no influence on practice. But so this was sort of a rereading of history. But what actually happened here was that the practice was certainly influenced by the Shulchan Aruch, but never there was never any pressure in Eastern Europe to be to keep Shabbat longer, Motzei Shabbat. There was plenty of pressure to keep it. And for example, he writes, quoting, I think I read this last week, in Galicia in the 18th century. I actually saw this book, but I was not allowed to photograph it. It was, they're strict on the Xerox. There may be a microfilm, which I'll be able to. Od ra'iti sha'uriya b'nei amenu. This is Rabbi Olesko writing in the middle of the 18th century in Galicia. She'osim betrei kuli desatri hadadi. Two contradictory kulot. The be'erav Shabbat osim melacha achar shkiyat hachama kedat Rabbeinu Tam. That they continue to work after the physical sunset like Rabbeinu Tam's position. Ve'hem einam mamtinim b'motzei Shabbat afilu chatzi sha'a u'madlikim nero. That may be a slight exaggeration that they don't even wait a half an hour, but they certainly don't wait the full 72 minutes. So it's an interesting set of events. The contribution of the reason why the Shulchan Aruch wrote what he did was that these were in the texts that he had. The reasons that these were in the texts that he had was first Rabbeinu Tam trying to resolve the contradiction between the two Gemarot, and then the Ramban trying to resolve an imaginary contradiction, namely how can you possibly be Mosif Michol al HaKodesh when the sun is still shining, and for us this is the practice that we make every week. This became the accepted view of the students of the Ramban, which meant the entire Spanish rabbinical community practically until the time of the Shulchan Aruch. So he wrote what he saw in his texts, and it didn't bother him this contradicted, in fact, the actual practice, because he regarded the actual practice as being on Friday nights as being more religious than necessary, and on Saturday night he didn't see this difference. And the practice, the printing press, together with all of those other non-Jewish pressures which came into play in the 17th century, led to this change in practice from the 17th through the 19th century, and in Hungary probably almost up until World War II. So you asked me at the beginning as to see what the influence of the general society is on the Jewish behavior, and here it's complicated. The major influence was the clock and the change in the everyday time and the advent of illumination and so on. But a considerable input was the Shulchan Aruch itself, which became available to the masses due to the advent, due to Mr. Gutenberg. All right, I want to spend maybe one more time on this, because the one person who reacted strongly against Rabbeinu Tam was our old friend, Rav Moshe Alashkar, one that we read last year about the issue of covering of the hair. Here he sort of is really angry that some theoretical resolution of the conflict between Gemaras by the invention of Rabbeinu Tam, and which did not reflect any reality at all because there's no such thing as a rakia, should have effect on a practical halakhic problem. Yeah, so am I, but that's the story. So one more topic devoted to this, and then I guess I have to pick another topic.